Sean, you were one of the originators of the band. In fact, I think it was formed by just three of you in the first instance. How old were you when you started?
15. Actually, we started the band just while I was doing my exams at school. And I went down for an audition at Brian's house after the morning exam. And I officially joined the band on the 26th of June, 1976.
Then that would indicate that there was something of a band before you went down, because you went for an audition, right?
Well, actually, there was just Brian and Dunk. And Brian wanted to be a keyboard player, and Dunk wanted to be a front man. So there was a rumour going round that I'd been singing Gene Vincent's Bebopalooler on a coach trip to Paris, and they wanted me to join the band. So I went down, and as I said, on the 26th, Brian came to school the next day, and he gave me a contract. I don't know what it was. I can't remember what it said, but it got like a big rubber stamp of his ship on it, which made it official. And I signed that, and that was the formation of the band from there on.
There were three of you?
Yeah, we didn't have a bass player till Colin came along, really.
When you did start gigging, eventually, did you play your own material?
We intended to use all our own material.
From the beginning?
Except some friends persuaded us to do Paranoid.
When did you then start writing together to the extent whereby you actually created a song and it got as good a reaction as Paranoid?
I think Am I Ever was the first reactionary song. We've changed it, like the album version. Mm-hmm. It took 2 years to write, and each time it got progressively better, and you could tell from crowds' reactions, not at individual gigs, I don't suppose, but overall, mm-hmm. the way that they seem to respond more to that one than any of the other songs.
That has become really a sort of Diamond Head classic, though, hasn't it?
It really has. So, yeah.
Well, it definitely has. If you ever play it on the radio, you always get a reaction from people when you meet them. People say, it's great to hear that again.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's fantastic. We were astounded when it was in the Kerrang charts. Mm. Just amazed us.
Let's go to the early days of recording. When did you make your first visit to a studio? And when you got there, were you not very perplexed by the whole technology of it?
78. We went to do a demo tape because we thought, if we want to get on, we've got to do a demo. Mm. And it was about £5 an hour for the studio.
And this was a local studio, wasn't it?
Yeah. Kidderminster?
Yeah, it was just above a music shop. So, like, every time a customer came in, he'd stop the tape and
go out and sell them.
And go out, sell a record and come back and make one. And with that demo tape, what did you then do?
Well, our manager used it, who at the time was just a schoolmate. He'd go around pubs and clubs trying to get gigs. And I think the best thing we did with it was send it to Jeff Barton of Sounds, and he sort of liked it.
He put it in his playlist. Yeah. Mm. And then, we did an interview with him.
So you what you really did was you just went it alone, didn't you, on the recording front?
Yeah.
I mean, you became completely and utterly independent. And you tell me the story. It's your story.
We didn't really put ourselves in the same class as bands that have got record deals. No. We just thought, we've got years of work ahead of us before we can get a record deal. And we just thought we've got to do gigs, lots of gigs, and maybe someday, something will come.
Up to then, we hadn't thought that we'd, besides writing a few tracks, like Am I Evil and Lightning and that, we really hadn't performed these tracks or even recorded them in any way good. We hadn't done them well. And I believe the record companies and the agencies were justified in not giving us much of a chance at the time. It's only, progressively we did get better and better. And that's when we started to look further afield and try desperately to get this, the sort of deal that we wanted.
Yeah, but before you got the current deal, mm-hmm. which you've now got with MCA Records, let's talk about the album that you put out. Because that was an interesting album that mm-hmm. suddenly arrived out of the middle of nowhere in a white sleeve, and that was it. From a band called Diamond Head. And who were Diamond Head? Nobody really knew. I'm talking about somebody who lives in the hallowed towers of the BBC or BRMB or Capital Radio or wherever. Exactly. But people, I think, without any hype, without any pre-publicity, played the record, listened to the record, and thought it was good.
Yeah. We're very pleased about the reaction we've had from the album. I mean, it was just unbelievable. We just went in without any sort of prior motive. We just went in to record it, and hopefully we thought we might, if it's good enough, get a licensing deal with somebody, mm-hmm. you know, to promote it. As it happened, that didn't turn around, but we never really thought about it when we went in. We just wanted to do the stuff, get it out, and have it, let people judge it for themselves.
Which is really what happened.
Mm, exactly. Yeah. The management put a lot of faith in us then. That's all they could do at the time was provide us with some money and so give us some incentive to carry on, because on all the other fronts it wasn't looking that good.
When you listen back to the copies of the album, assuming that you still have copies...
Oh, yeah, I got about six.
Right.
Well, yeah, three Wolf Guns.
What do you think of it now?
Well, it's good enough to the extent that, although we believe, like, we're technically a lot better, technically playing, singing-wise, and we think that we could probably produce it ourselves better, we are taking, like, Am I Evil and Lightning to the Nations off that album and put them on the new album because we think they justify a bigger audience,
mm-hmm.
hopefully. And we think we can do them a little bit better as well. Especially Am I Evil, it was good, but we believe that we can take it a step further, like we do with Sucking My Love. The track on the album is nothing compared to the track we do live now.
And this brings us to the MCA record label. Yeah. I mean, the independence has now, to a degree, if you like, gone out the window.
To a degree.
Well, we've been, one of the reasons why we've been an independent band for so long was because we were wary of signing a deal with somebody who wanted to sort of change us and mould us into something that we weren't.
Now that you are signed to a major record company, is it as you imagined it would be?
It's a lot harder, I think.
Yeah, I think so. It's you think when you get a record deal, it'll be a, you know, a life of luxury, but it's the opposite.
No swimming pool in Barbados, that's for sure. It's when we write a single, we don't want it to be an album track, we want it to be a single. Album tracks go the way that they're meant to go. You don't.
An album track can be 8 minutes long.
Exactly.
An 8 minute single does not get a lot of radio play.
We like to do long songs, so I don't think we can help it at the moment. Yeah. We've wrote other tracks for future albums that are up to 10 minutes long, you know.
Yeah. Let's talk about your last release on MCA, which was a four-cut EP.
Yeah, we tried to give a good cross-section because Call Me was our first ever real effort at doing a commercial single.
Mm-hmm.
Dead Reckoning was an older song, which it won't be on an album because it's not up to the standard of the album tracks. But even so, it's a good track for an EP. I mean, when we talk about not up to standard, we've got a higher standard for our album tracks than for our B-sides. Shut Out the Lights... we felt we could do it better than we did in the first place. And I heard it the other night, and I think we did do it a little bit better. I sound like I was about an 8-year-old schoolboy with a green cap on. On the first single. Have you seen the logo, Tom? Mm. Do you like it?
Mm.
I designed that.
It's distinctive.
It's not as good as it could be yet, but it's the basic format.
Step in the right direction.
Yeah, hopefully.
Right, let's talk about the first MCA album. How far are you into recording that album now?
Well, we're about halfway through. We've done the bass and drums, some of the rhythm guitars. We're really pleased because it's living up to our expectations.
Are any of the tracks that are going to be on the album part of your now live set?
Most, I think.
I think they all are, every single track.
Yeah.
We do live, and probably done live for... the new single.
When do you think you will have completed this album?
It'll only take like 3 weeks, but it might be finished till sort of first week in August.
Let's talk about still something that does intrigue me about you, which I actually applaud, and that's your independent state of mind, both as a unit and as individuals. When and why did you decide to form Diamond Head Music?
To protect ourselves from the rat race. And the outside world.
Beginning in 1980.
It's sort of a very protective shell, you know, it keeps you, like you say, independent.
How many UK dates do you think you've played? How many gigs?
Carl's the guy. He's the guy.
I've lost count at the moment.
Yeah.
It's since 1980, it's just over 200, which, I mean, we had about 6 months off at the end of last year into this year through lack of finances. So it's quite a... Not a bad average, I don't think.
What about live dates in the future and touring?
I don't think there's anything set up at the moment for definite, but the album hopefully will be out around September, and obviously we want to do a tour to coincide with that.
First week in October, hopefully. Be sort of a 20-day British tour.
Do you have any special plans for live presentation?
We don't want sort of 50,000 million tons of TNT to go off, you know, as we hit the stage. The stage presentation is very important, probably more so to other people than it is to us, but we realise that as fans, people want to, you know, they want to see something that they can remember.
Something to look at.
Oh, that's exactly.
A show. Colin, who's your favourite band?
At the moment, I have to say Rush, because, well, as a musician, they cater for my taste. I don't know, they're a bit self-indulgent, I suppose, at times, but they're just the best for me.
We like the way they progress.
Would you say that they're your favourite band, Sean?
No, I like them very, very much, but I like Led Zeppelin.
But Led Zeppelin is no more.
No. Elvis Presley's no more, but he's still vivid to a lot of people.
Do you have any hobbies?
I like to play tennis, but I have about sort of one set every 4 years.
If you hadn't chosen music and you hadn't picked up a bass guitar, what would you like to be doing now?
Oh, well, I was a
very keen... semi-comatose fisherman.
That's right. Yeah, so that's... I'd be on the way to the World Championships as well, trying very hard.
You're right. He's a good fisherman. You know, he's humble, but he's a good fisherman.
Now I just want to earn enough money to be able to go fishing every day.
Fair enough. What about
something
you?
Something to work towards.
I'd hope to be in Spain now, playing for England. That's what I'd like to be doing.
You would?
Yeah.
But basically, you don't have the time. As yet, you don't have the money. And you've already spent 6 years of your life building what you are now, haven't you?
Yeah. Right.
Well, really, once we've, you know, we've gone, like you say, 6 years, we've gone so far, we've got to take it right to the end now, as far as we can possibly take it. There would never be any reason for falling apart. Because we all want to take it as far as we possibly can. We all, like Colin, you know, we all want to be the best at what we do if we can. It's a very sort of high standard to go for, but it's got to be the best way, professionally and sort of songwriting wise. Because like Brian's ambition, as mine, is to write a track which people will remember for years to come. When you can do a track like that, you can say, you know, you've finally arrived. Up until then, I'm just sort of learning, you know, treading water.
What about Europe? How do you view France, Germany, Belgium, and so on?
Through a very big telescope.
Good one. But what would happen if somebody turned around to you and said, all right, if you really want to make it internationally, you're going to have to leave your bedroom in Starbridge, right, and go and hike yourself up and down the freeways of America for the next 9 months. Would you be happy to do that?
I'd like to have a go at sort of cracking America. We've done 9 or 10 tours here, so we know basically, you know, one venue from another. I know America's sort of 4 million times the size of England, but the structure, I suppose, from clubs and the way they go up, has got to be sort of the same. And I wouldn't mind starting right at the bottom. Mm. You know, it's no big deal. You should start at the bottom so that you realise when you've got to the top, hopefully.